everyone, and welcome to another brilliant sport and lifestyle biz here on your Real Feel Good Radio, UK Health Radio. This week we've got a special. We've got three amazing women, all at different stages of their life and their career. We've got Holly Doyle, one of the leading jockeys in the world. We've also got Molly Campbell, one of the leading youngsters in the country. And then Rhea Bowes, one of the up-and-coming superstars of women's football, who plays for England and Chelsea. Throw in our SLB Sports Roundup and we know you're going to love this one. You'll never stop this, but I will never let you go. Well, who am I to say? Maybe by now you should know. You got your somebody calling, you think you're somebody, don't you? I think you're scared of keeping somebody close. Well, everybody, back with me today is superstar black jockey Holly Doyle. Hi, Holly. How are you?
Hi. Yeah, I'm very good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you. Lovely to hear from you. Thank you again for your time. Yet again, as always, you're on the way to the races because I know you've got a packed schedule. So, yeah, appreciate you giving your time up for us. Thank you. I just want to touch on, you know, you were injured the last time we spoke, which was a sad time for you. I know you like to be out riding. You're back now. So just want to touch on the injury, your recovery and your comeback, really. We'll start off, obviously, with the injury. We know you had an injury to your elbow. If you could just tell us about, you know, the detail of the injury, what actually happened to your elbow, and your recovery and the hard work you put in.
Yeah, sure. I had a fall in the middle of January and ruptured both my ligaments in my elbow and fractured the joint and dislocated it. So that wasn't ideal, and it took a while for things to get figured out what to do with it. My specialist, in a month into rehab, they decided they needed to operate on it, so I had to have ligament repair because they were both completely ruptured still and not healing. So I had that, and then I was pretty not in a great way for a few weeks after that, but then when I was able to come out of the sling, it was obviously a lot better and turned the corner, and I was back riding last Friday, so I've been back riding a week now, but I've basically done rehab for the whole 3 months, so, and had physio every day, and Oaksea House were really good of helping me get back.
That's lovely to hear and great that you're all well. If I could just touch on the decision that's made. You said that a month into the rehab they decided you needed an operation. Obviously that's what they thought was best, to go without an operation. They wouldn't choose you down that route if it wasn't best. But is it something they sit down with you and you decide together, or is it something you put totally in their hands and, you know, you totally take their advice?
Yeah, no, I had no say in anything really. I was just doing what I was told. I was a bit confused as to why I wasn't just going to have it operated on, because it was quite a bad injury, but they thought that it would heal itself, and because I wanted to be back for the summer, they thought it would be quicker to just let it heal naturally, but obviously it wasn't, so then they did the operation. Since they did the operation, it actually was healing very quickly.
Yeah, and the reason for the question, really, is when we spoke before, you were telling us how bad it was, and it was just a wonder as to why, that, as you just alluded to then, why they didn't go down the operation route immediately. But as it is, you know, they say things happen for a reason. You got the right operation, obviously. It's important. Knowing how important ligaments are in knees to footballers, elbows are obviously very important to jockeys. You know, it is a serious injury. You've made your recovery. You're all made of steel, we know that, because you're back riding already. You've been back for a little bit. The rehab and the physio was hard work, but obviously a necessity.
Yeah, I had to do it really. Doing my gym stuff every day and keeping fit, because I didn't want to lose anything. I was surprised as to how much strength I did lose in my arm after the surgery, but that's typical, isn't it? But
yeah.
No, I managed to kind of maintain everything. So when I've come back, it's not been too hard. Obviously, I've still got quite a long way to go with my arm, as good as the other one, but it's really getting there, so that's good.
Yeah, that's really good. And you're right about the fitness. Just from my research and experience, they generally say with a footballer, if you train every day, like as a professional, if you miss a week, it's like missing 3 weeks, if that makes sense. So you clearly, obviously, as you said, you found it sort of surprising how much you actually lost in that time. But as we said, it's all good news. You're back now, you're fit and you're firing. Just a quick note on Tom, obviously your husband. He was injured at the same time as you, and it could have been quite a scary injury. And the people know racing knows that he's back in Australia and doing exceptionally well. Is he all fit and everything okay with him?
Yeah, and he's back riding. He had a big winner at the weekend. His injury, he had his operation the day after it happened, so he was pretty fixed up quickly, which was good. And then he came home for 3 weeks, did some rehab, and then went back to Australia to ride, and he seems to be doing pretty well now.
Yeah, he does very well over there. We've gone over it several times, haven't we? They call him Aussie Tom because I think they want to adopt him. But yeah, nice to see him win that big race for a third year in a row. But you're back in the winners. You had a winner on your first ride back, which generally happens, but it's always nice, isn't it? You've had a couple of really nice winners, but you had a nice winner on an old friend, Rainbow Dreamer, in the marathon, the all-weather championships at Newcastle. What was it like to get him over the line in such a big race?
Yeah, it was great. He's 10 years old now, so I've known him for a few years. Yeah. I've won 30 on him, and he's been running well all winter, really, and he's never won at Newcastle, so he did deserve to really get his head in front. And good to be back in the winner's enclosure for Alan also.
Yeah, brilliant that he won. And, you know, as you said, he is 10. You've won plenty of races on him. I remember you won two or three on him quite quickly a few years ago. And that sort of got him to prominence in a way. It's surprising he hasn't won at Newcastle. You'd have thought that the long straight might suit his style. But he doesn't lose it, does he? There was plenty of fancied horses that all ran pretty well, but he just came past them all and never looked like going to get beat, really, in the last furlong and a half.
Yeah, he's a good horse on his day, and they went very quick, and the pace set up collapsed in front, and he needs a good pace to weigh him at, and he stayed on well.
Yeah, you brought him with a great run, Holly. Lovely to see it. And said you've had a few winners. How have you felt since you've come back? The arm all good? Your fitness generally good? Or is it now just finding that last few percent that you can only get by actual race riding?
No, exactly. Nothing compares to race riding, so I don't feel like I've been anywhere, really, which is weird. I obviously couldn't weight bear my arm for a few months, so working hard now back in the gym with my weight training, and then be back to full strength.
Wonderful. And really, yes, we know how well you do on the all-weather, and you finished second, I think, last winter in the all-weather championship. But the turf's really where it's at, isn't it? You know, now you're at the level you are, you're looking at the turf races. And obviously the big ones really start in the next couple of weeks, don't they?
Yeah, you've got the Craven in 2 weeks' time, so that's where it'll kick off.
Yeah, and you've got some rides, have you planned, sort of, during that period? In the big one?
Yeah, I'll be riding every day, so.
Wonderful.
From now onwards.
Brilliant. So great, yeah, you're at Kempton today, as we said. One thing I was going to ask you, obviously you're at Kempton, you've got a couple for Archie Watson, I believe, who's your main trainer, and obviously got your owner link with Mohammed Al Sagar. I know you've ridden a long time for Alan King. Sometimes, you know, if you stand still or if you get injured in a sport like racing, someone can come in and take your place. I know you said you felt like you haven't been away, but have you just blended back in with your old connections and the rides are just going to keep coming?
Yeah, I'm pretty lucky. I've got plenty of support, so then the people that have used me before have stepped by me. Obviously, people do try and jump in your grave.
Yeah.
When you're not there, but I've been pretty lucky.
Yeah, you can say that. Yeah, they do. I suppose that's just being a professional, I suppose. But
yeah,
it's lovely to hear, because obviously you are a brilliant jockey, Holly. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing you go through the summer, having plenty of winners, more Royal Ascot winners, hopefully another classic winner and some more Group 1s. We know you said you had a couple to look forward to. One from Ahmed at House Cigars, which is obviously a very nice one to look forward to. Any big targets for you again, or is it just your normal, I just want to ride as many winners as possible?
Yeah, you know, obviously riding winners is what drives me, but yeah. I want to ride some big winners and keep finding a good one each year.
We'll take the classics out of the way, because we know everyone wants to win a classic, and it is difficult. You could ride probably the second best horse in the country, or that sort of, if you know what I mean. And you could finish second in all of them, but you're still not going to get that classic win. But is there any that you haven't won, say like it's a normal Group 1 or a normal group race, that you really would like to win for any reason?
Obviously everyone wants to win the Derby, but going to find the right horse, haven't you? But that would be the dream.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's the pinnacle of everyone, isn't it? If you get a Derby winner, obviously that can lead on to King George, Art, can't it? You know, loads of big races. So yeah, I just want to leave you there, Holly. I want to let you get on. As I said, we know you're on your way to Kempton, so we appreciate you doing this. And just want to say thank you for your time. Have a wonderful season, and it's lovely to see you back. Be safe, be successful, and hopefully we can catch up with you soon.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Cheers, John.
Thanks, Holly. Take care. Joining me this week is one of our favourite guests. She's young star golfer. It's Molly Campbell. Hi, Molly. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really, really well, thank you. Appreciate you doing this for us. Just tell us quickly where you're off to today.
I'm off to Cleckheaton Golf Course to play in a Rotherham scratch match.
Wow, okay. Something exciting. Have you played the course before?
Yeah.
Good. And it's a course that you like?
It's all right.
It's all right. Okay, no, that's good. Good luck with that. I just want to just catch up with you, really, since we last spoke. You know, let us know how your 2023 is going. A couple of things that are nice to talk about. So, yeah, just tell us how things are going with the game at the moment and how you feel 2023 has gone so far for you.
Yeah, it's gone well so far. It's been a good start to the season. I feel like I'm playing well and a few big comps coming up. So, be interested to see how they go.
Yeah, and you played in a couple of decent competitions as well recently.
Yeah, so I've just come back from Northern County Week, which finished yesterday.
Yeah.
So I played for Yorkshire and we ended up winning.
That's fair. How does that work? How many players in a team? What sort of competition is it?
So there's 9 players in a team. 7 players play per day.
Yeah.
So there's 3 single matches per match and then there's 2 fours matches. So on Monday...
Yeah.
In the morning, we played against Cumbria. So I played in a foursomes match, and me and my partner won.
Lovely.
And then we won 5-0 against Cumbria.
Yeah.
Then we played Northumberland in the afternoon. Again, same format, 3 singles, 2 foursomes. We won again 5-0. So we were basically 10-0, all matches won. I think we were leading by 3 points going into the second day.
Yeah.
So in the morning we had Cheshire and Durham in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And we beat both of them. Same score for both. And then on the last day we played against Lancashire. We won 3.5, 1.5. We ended up winning.
Brilliant. It's just like a league basis, was it? So whoever got the most points over all the matches, there was no like knockouts at the end. It was just you played each other once and the top scorers won.
Yeah.
Fabulous. And you guys won every match as well. I mean, that's pretty convincing.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Great that you're playing for Yorkshire. I understand congratulations are in order about your handicap. You've reached a milestone, actually gone past it. And I just want you to let us know what your feelings are now you've got there and whether this achievement's actually ahead of what your own personal schedule was.
Well, yeah, so I'm now playing off plus 0.1, which is officially plus. It's not a lot, but it's still plus. So yeah. I set myself a target to be playing off at least scratch, if not better.
Yeah.
Which I've basically completed before the season's really got started.
Yeah.
So that's good, and we've had to basically set another target to get even lower now.
Wow. That's just amazing. You know, I mean, for most people like myself, who, well, we're nowhere near the standard that you are, you know, even dreaming of getting anywhere near scratch, you don't even think about going plus. The fact you've gone plus already is just amazing. Absolutely fantastic. So you've obviously been hitting quite a few rounds sort of under par to get to that level.
Yeah, I've had a couple of under pars at Hollingwell and a few like levels, one overs here and there, which have helped. So I'm playing good golf, good steady golf.
Yeah.
Which I'm really confident in my game at the minute.
That's brilliant. So I remember when we spoke on a couple of occasions last year, you were having growth spurts, you were having a couple of issues with your knee, and even though you were still playing brilliant to the normal eye, you were not quite 100% happy in yourself. So you feel it's all come together now?
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah.
Brilliant. And you're hitting the ball further off the tee now as well?
Yeah, I've recently got a new driver, because my old driver, I was striking it really well, but I was getting way too much spin.
Okay.
So as soon as the ball basically hits the ground, it's coming in so high that even with burnt out ground like now, it's not really running. So I've got a new driver, which is coming out at a much better flight. So I'm carrying it further, and obviously it's running out further.
That's fabulous. And just for a lot of the people that have an interest but aren't really sort of what you'd say technically educated in golf, the further you hit it, obviously it gives you an advantage because you can go in with a shorter iron, which I presume helps with holding the ball near the pin. Any other good points about that, or is that the main thing?
That's probably the main thing, to be honest.
Good and fabulous. Even that long time ago that I saw you play, you've always been good around the green. So, I mean, obviously that's been a massive help to your game as well.
Yeah.
Also, something else that we briefly touched on last time was that you're now selected for the under-18 regional England team, which at your age is amazing. Tell us about the camps that you have with them and what the relative age is compared to yours with the rest of the squad members.
Well, It's more of a coaching squad, like once every month or so.
Yeah.
Sometimes even twice. We all like meet up and do like coaching and stuff. So, yeah, it's just a team sort of where all eight of us do coaching together.
And do you actually get to play any matches against others, or is it just, as you said, just more coaching and getting you guys ready for when you're 18?
It's just really coaching, to be honest.
It's good, though. Level's very good, and, you know, you can obviously tell the difference.
Yeah.
Fabulous, fabulous. So, yeah, you're obviously onto that competition today, Molly. Tell us about the bigger competitions you've got coming up soon.
I've got the English girls under-18s and English girls under-16s. They're the next two that are coming up. I've got Scottish girls under-16s after that, which is at, like, the start of the summer holidays. And then I've also got Midlands under-21s.
Wow. So they're all actually coming up quite soon. Tell us, whereabouts are they? What course are they held at?
I'm not really sure on the Scotland one, okay, to be honest, because that's more of a recent thing that we've booked into.
Right, okay.
The under-18s is at Effingham, and the under-16s is at Sheffingham.
Okay.
And then the Midlands under-21s is at Stoke Rochford.
Okay. Have you played any of those courses before?
No.
Okay, so you'll go down there, what, day before, have a practice round?
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got quite a lot to get yourself ready for. You're obviously happy with your game. It sounds all exciting and things are progressing nicely for you. Does that mean any different for you going back to your handicap, you being obviously under scratch effectively? Does that mean you actually qualify for bigger tournaments or more tournaments, or does it really not have much difference?
It doesn't really have much difference at the minute, because, like, all the competitions which go based off ballots, where the competition's full, so the lowest handicaps get in.
Yeah.
And more for, like, your under-25s and stuff, which we're not going to do this year.
Okay, well, that's good, Molly. I mean, the game's brilliant. I'm so happy that you're going forward. You're obviously progressing in your golf, hitting the ball further. Sounds, in conversations with your dad, your knee's not as bad. You're playing through it, which is a good thing to do. I know you're still having looks at that, so hopefully that's all good for you. One thing that's quite controversial in golf that I wanted to just ask you about from a young player's point of view is PIF and LIV, which gets a lot of traction on social media. There's a lot of bad feelings between both tours, although they've now decided to merge. What's your feeling on LIV and the payments to golfers, if you have any feeling on that? Huge money just to go and play less golf. What's your feelings on that?
Well, to be honest, it was going to happen at some point. When Brooks won the major,
yeah,
it was going to happen, because all the press surrounding it, it still showed that these players were still relevant, and it showed even at the weekend gone that, like, the players are still going to come back for all the majors, and yeah, they're there for a winning chance. So yeah, it was going to happen eventually, and there's positives and negatives to it, but you have to look at the other elements of it. And ladies golf, it's going to bring a lot more money into ladies golf. It'll be interesting to see how it will affect the tour schedule for ladies and the purse for ladies competitions as well.
Yeah, so there's rumours of it's actually filtering into the ladies game as well, because that was going to be one of my questions to you, because at the moment obviously it's just the men. Is there something similar going to happen, or is it just that money's going to filter through now that they've merged?
Well, it'll probably be something similar, because the LPGA and the PGA, they're still connected.
Yeah.
So it would be very, very strange if the LPGA didn't also come into the factor of it, because LIV have all their ladies competitions as well. So
right,
LIV can't just abandon all of their ladies.
Right, okay. And that does make sense. It's just nice to know. Golf, to be fair, money's quite good at the top, I think, even on the ladies game, but it's nice to know that they're actually getting some of that. The ladies are sort of getting taken care of as well.
Yeah.
Well, Molly, I just want to say, I'll let you get on your way. I know you want to get in the right mindset. I just want to say thank you so much for chatting to me today. We'll definitely catch up. Good luck today, and we'll speak very soon.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, Molly.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
strawberries and cream.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Well, everybody, joining me today is young England football star. It's Rhea Bowes from Chelsea in England. Hi, Rhea, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, really well, thank you. Enjoying the good weather at the moment?
Yeah, I am. It's a very big change for England, but...
I know.
Yeah, I'm getting the most out of it.
It's a warm one, isn't it, today?
Yeah, it is.
Wonderful. Enough of the weather. Let's talk about what everyone's interested in talking about. Obviously, your football. As we said, you're with Chelsea and England, which we'll come back to in a minute. But if you're happy, we go back to the start so people get to know you a little bit better. Growing up, what was your pathway through school and grassroots? Did you find it easy to find teams or did you have to play against the boys a lot?
I think I was quite good. When that matter, because I started grassroots when I was around 6 and I was only really playing with a boys team for around a year or two, and then when I was 7 or 8 I got selected to be in Brighton's academy for girls, so I didn't really play against boys that much when I was growing up.
And that's a real young age, isn't it, to go in. Brighton's a really good setup. For people that don't know, Brighton's probably one of the best setups for academies there is. So that must have been great for you to get selected by them or scouted by them. How did you find it there at Brighton?
Brighton, I actually really liked Brighton. It was a, like, family, like the team were all like family, because obviously you're there from a young age, so you grow up with them. I was there for around 6 years. So, yeah, I really liked the experience I got from it.
Yeah, and a decent part, not only your football life, but your life as well. So you obviously grew up as well as a person through Brighton. I mean, I said from what I know, they've got a good setup, and you said it was great. They were really professional and good all the way through?
Yeah, the coach and staff, the people which worked there, they were all great the whole time I was there.
And that's wonderful to hear, because girls' sort of football does often get portrayed as not having the opportunities, which we again know is true. So you didn't really have to worry about that. Were there many opportunities anyway for you around your area for girls if Brighton hadn't come along, or do you think it had been playing with boys a lot more?
I knew at that age that at that time there was no girls' teams. It was mainly you train... Well, for younger ages anyway, like, there might have been girls' teams in older age groups, but definitely not for younger. So I feel like everyone was sort of doing grassroots with the boys' teams until the only way out was to train with a girls' academy.
Yeah, and brilliant. You got picked up so early and obviously justified because of where you are at the moment. But you've probably got friends that play football that aren't in academies. There's obviously a lot more being done for girls now, but still not enough, is there? The boys still outweigh the girls.
Yeah, but I'd say, like, especially because of the women jurors and everything, yeah. It's got a lot better.
Yeah, that exploded, didn't it, really, after that? It was a great day, I must admit, to be there for the final. Yeah, it didn't do any harm, did it? You know, it was fabulous for the game.
Yeah.
You went to Brighton, you said you stayed there 6 or 7 years, obviously a standout. Did you then go straight to Chelsea, or was there a period between the two clubs?
No, I think I left Brighton at 12 or 13, and then I went straight to Chelsea for the next season. There was not really...
And was that through their trial system, or had they actually watched you in a game or something and asked you to go along?
Yeah, it was through their trials.
Yeah.
You get asked to go to the trials. So, yeah. Yeah, it was a bit of both.
Yeah, are they still held at Cobham, are they?
Yeah.
A lovely facility there, really, really nice. So, been through a great setup at Brighton, then moving to Chelsea. How did you feel when, you know, they offered you the contract?
Like, obviously, trialing for them, I was nervous because it was the first thing I've actually done different in my career, because obviously I'd always been at Brighton, so I was very nervous. And then when they offered the contract, I was just excited to start a new thing, really.
Yeah, and the fact you said you got nervous obviously meant a lot to you. Obviously, you know, you clearly have the mindset that you want to be a footballer. What is the difference between Chelsea and Brighton? Is there much difference in attitude from the coaches, in the way you're pushed, or is it pretty much similar? It's just obviously perhaps a slightly higher standard of more players at Chelsea.
That's a difficult one. I think at Brighton, it was great. It was probably the best thing I could have done at that age.
Yeah.
But as I got older... I wanted more of a change and a challenge because you can't always be so comfortable at a club. So then I moved to Chelsea and I progressed so much more, and it was just, it was a good move. Yeah. It was a difficult move because I love Brighton and I always will, but it was the right move at that time for me, yeah.
Yeah, you can clearly tell you have a lot of affection for Brighton. They obviously treated you amazingly and brought you on. But I suppose at Chelsea, pretty much every player there is top, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, so obviously it pushes you more, which means you develop yourself.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, so we've covered how you got to Chelsea. How does the system work? At the moment, are you in the reserves, in the first team squad? What are you doing at the moment there?
I'm currently playing for the under-18s team in Chelsea.
And is that like a league against like all the other major teams that have under-18 teams?
Yeah, so last season we were playing against all the academies around London until it got to the FA Cup where you'd play like different teams. Like we played Man United.
And how did you do in the league and the cup?
League, we didn't win the league, but we won the cup.
Oh, that's cool. That's good. That's nice to get a trophy.
Yes.
Yeah, really good, really good. So, you're obviously 18 next birthday. Is it your focus to move into the first team squad if you can? And how realistic is that at your young age? Are Chelsea good at bringing through the youngsters, or do they like to sort of develop you by perhaps giving you more football at different clubs?
I'd say my biggest focus right now is training hard to try and sign a pro on my 18. Chelsea's very good. They do give a lot of opportunity to young players, but you have to follow your pathway and stay in your pathway. You can't really rush being training up or anything like that, because all the coaches know you as a player and a person, and they all know when you're ready. So it's more just trust in them.
Yeah, yeah. And all you can do is go in and work your hardest every day.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So we've covered sort of where you are at Chelsea. It's amazing, by the way. We coach a lot of young girls. A lot of them just want to get to the trials, and we do send some to trials, and we've had a little bit of success in the past. It's nice to speak to somebody who's been through the system, grounded brilliantly through Brighton, now at Chelsea. So obviously we know why you're at Chelsea. You're a talented footballer. You've got a great attitude because you said how you want to go in, you want to work hard, you want to challenge yourself. And that's seen you get into the England under 18 squad. How again did you feel when you got the call? Was it like a squad day that you went to? Was it like an England training camp? How does it work? And how did you feel when you got told you were wanted for the squad?
Yeah, so with England, been with England from a younger age.
Right.
Not younger age, but since I was around 10 years at Brighton, so 13, 14. And that's their just camps, training camps. And then the first international debut I had was when I was 16, because when you're in under 16s, that's when you start pairing, you know, for Euros or tournaments. And on that first call up, it was just one of the best feelings. It was definitely an achievement I'd ticked off in football so far. And every time I get an England call up, I'm more grateful each time.
I mean, how amazing is that, just to play for your country? I mean, you know, you're in the elite for your age group.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So have you played any games at the moment, or is it just preparation at this age for the under-17s, under-18 tournament?
So we just finished the under-17 Euros.
Yeah.
So now at England, it would be preparation for the next Euros.
Lovely.
Because we don't have a World Cup here, right. So it'd be the next tournament.
Okay, well, that's great. I mean, how did you do in that?
So I wasn't there for round one and two.
Okay.
The girls done great. They won every game and drew one, but didn't lose a game. And then when we got to the Euros, we won every game up until we got to the semi-finals, and then we lost against Spain.
Wow, that's unlucky. And I don't know how Spain under-17s are, but you've got to look at the national team, and they were probably the team that pushed England the most during the Euros. That was probably the only game England could have lost. So obviously, if it works its way down, they're a good side. So how amazing is that? You must have been really proud of yourself to get to the semi-finals.
Yeah, it was great.
Brilliant. So thanks for that, Ria. We've obviously spoken about Chelsea, we've spoken about England and how, you know, you've done so well in the Euros. Let's talk a little bit about you on the pitch. What is your favourite position and what do you feel is your best position? Surprisingly enough, they're not always the same.
No. It's a weird one. So a few years ago, I was playing right wing, and I'd been a right winger since the age of 6, and I could never imagine moving any other position until England decided to put me right back.
Right, okay.
And at first, I hated it. It's a very difficult thing to adjust to in defence, but then as I kept on playing them and Chelsea helped me with the positioning, coaches helped. I play right back now. My favourite position is definitely right back.
That's a great answer because, as you said, just whilst you started playing there, right back would have been neither, would it? But now you said both. What was it you found the most challenging about switching from that attacking role to the defending role?
Probably the positioning. I'd say the difference in press, the difference in the position. Because if you're a right wing, you're connecting with players in front of you, your striker or even your centre mid, and you're trying to combine to go forward. With a right back is you're helping, you're linked in a back four if you play a back four. So it's all about knowing your centre back, just working well as a pair, which would work if you're a right wing working well with your right back as well, but it's different because it's more defensive.
Yeah, and do they encourage you to overlap and go forward, or is it more like old style? As you're young and they're still sort of developing you, is it more you're a defender first and go forward if you can?
Oh, no, definitely they want us to go forward and combine with the right winger.
You still get that little bit of joy going forward then?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's great that you've adapted to it as well. And, you know, it's funny how different coaches see different positions, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really good. So that's great. Thank you for that. And then can I just ask what your hopes and dreams are for the future?
I hope to carry on my pathway at Chelsea, progress more. And with England, I want to go as far as I can. I want to carry on representing my country and hopefully winning the next Euros tournament we have whilst getting better.
Yeah, that would be amazing and lovely words. Obviously, Chelsea are the benchmark. I think Manchester United had a great season this season, but Chelsea are the benchmark. And they were playing pretty much twice a week, weren't they, for the last 3 months of the season?
Yeah.
On every front they were fighting, apart from the champ, they pretty much done everything again. So, amazing team. Amazing that you're in their setup and, you know, you're being successful with them. I love the fact that you were grounded at Brighton. As I said, great setup. You were there a number of years and really pleased to hear how well you're doing at England. You've changed your position, you've adapted to it, and you got to the semi-final of Euros, and you're looking to go two better, you know, into the final and win it, the next one, hopefully. So that's amazing.
Yeah.
Just one thing before we finish the interview, Ria, if I may, is we do coach girls. I know there's a lot of ambitious girls out there who still probably aren't in the right areas to be seen. What advice would you give girls to either put themselves more in the limelight, or if they do get a knockback, how they just, you know, have to battle back and fight hard and come again?
My favourite quote would be, trust the process. I think even when I tore my ACL and I saw everyone around me playing football, it was a major knockback, but I liked it was a minor setback ready for a major comeback. So if you ever have anything that delays your career a bit more, then it's happened for a reason. And I think going along a long path where you've got so much time, if you're young, you're not always going to be in an academy straight away, and the best you can do is give your everything, train as hard as you can, and usually it always rewards you.
Well, I couldn't have put it better. Lovely words. Really great for young girls to hear that. I didn't know about your injury, so all credit for you for bouncing back from that. And for today, Ria Bowes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living. We've been doing this for over 40 years. Every year, more and more people are living satisfying lives completely cruelty-free. Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
feel alive. And the world, I'm turning inside out. Yeah. I'm floating around in ecstasy. So
don't stop me now. Don't stop me.
'Cause I'm having a good time. Shooting star leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity. I'm a racing car passing by like Lady Godiva. I'm gonna go, 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 there's no stopping me. I'm burning through the sky, yeah. 200 degrees, that's why they call me Mr. Fahrenheit. I'm traveling at the speed of light. I wanna make a supersonic man.
We finish off this week's show with our SLB Sports Roundup featuring golf, horse racing, cricket, tennis, motorsport and football. Some news on some transfers. We start with golf. The PGA Tour held the Barbasol Championship from the Keene Tracy Golf Club in Kentucky and it was won by Vincent Norman, who beat Nathan Kimsey in a playoff at the first hole. They finished on minus 22, one shot clear of tied third for Adrian Sadia and Trevor Cohn. This week, they come across the pond to the UK for the Open, the biggest tournament in golf, and it's being held at the Royal Liverpool Golf Course, known as Hoylake. The DP World Tour hosted the Scottish Open, the known predecessor to the Open every year. It was held at the Renaissance Club in East Lothian, Scotland, and it was won by Rory McIlroy, back to form, pushed all the way, and had to go birdie-birdie to win the championship. He finished on minus 15, one shot clear of Scott Rob McIntyre, who played brilliant. And he was then four further clear of a tie for third place, Bjorn Ann, David Lindmarth and Scotty Scheffler. Obviously, they share the majors. So the tournament this week on the DP World Tour is also the Open from Hoylake. Look out for Rory McIlroy back in form. Scotty Scheffler, who was almost there last week, almost looks like he's coming into the right form. You've got to look out for LIV golfers. Brooks Koepka, who is unbelievable, and Cam Smith, who's the current Open champion. And then there's also more. John Rahm's back. There's quite a few who could do it. We like Rory. If he plays like he finished off this week, he must have a brilliant shot. The LPGA held the Greater Toledo LPGA Classic from the Highland Meadows Golf Course in Colorado. It was won by Swede Lynn Grant on minus 21, who smashed through the field in round three and then had a good round yesterday to consolidate that win. Alison Corpus, cementing the promise of her Open win last week, finished second with a great final round, three back on minus 18, further three back to Lindy Duncan, minus 15. This week they've got the Dow Great Lakes Bay Invitational from the Midland Country Club in Texas. Horse racing, the big meeting at Newmarket last week, we had a number of winners that we passed on to you. In the big race of the meeting, the July Cup, Shaquille, as we put forward, won his Group 1, despite doing a lot of things wrong in the race, giving a first Group 1 win to Ross Orion. The Falmouth Stakes, Nashua, with our good friend Holly Doyle, gave Holly another Group 1. She was fantastic. The Superlative Stakes, City of Troy, please put this one in your notebook. This was a two-year-old who won easy for Aidan O'Brien and Ryan Moore. We feel this could be a horse to follow for next year in the Guineas, maybe even getting the Derby trip. And in the Bunbury Cup, Biggles, for a trainer to follow Ralph Beckett, also ridden by Ryan Moore. He might be in the big race at the end of the month at Ascot. Also at the end of the month at Ascot, it's the King George, one of the big race all-age championships of the season in England. The three-year-olds are represented by Auguste Rodin, the Derby winner, and King of Steel, the Derby runner-up. We like the older horse Emily Upjohn and maybe the even older Pile Driver. It will be a great race, and it may be decided by the ground. Cricket, in the men's Ashes, we're on the fourth test that's just started from Old Trafford in Manchester. As you know, Australia went 2-0 up. England hit back in the third test to make it 2-1. And the way England play cricket, we won't be getting any draws unless the rain intervenes. So two to play, England need to win both to win the Ashes. The women's Ashes have finally been decided, with Australia winning the penultimate one-day international to retain the Ashes. Australia won the Test match and the first T20 to have 6 points in the scoring system, only needing one win from the last five matches to retain the Ashes. Well, England won the last two T20s. They won the first one-day international to make it 6 points all. But Australia scraped home by 3 runs in the penultimate one-day international to retain the Ashes. They've got one final match, which is being held this week, to see if Australia win the Ashes or if the series is tied and Australia just retain. Tennis, and it was the iconic Open at Wimbledon, SW19. The women's was won by Marketa Vondrousova, her first ever time at Wimbledon, her first major. She beat the unlucky Ons Jabeur, who we put forward for you, 2-0 in the final, 6-4, 6-4. And it was Ons Jabeur's second defeat in a row at Wimbledon. She'll hopefully be back, but what a great win. And then quite possibly in the men's, one of the greatest finals you'll ever see. One of the greatest players ever, if not the best, Novak Djokovic. He's won 23 majors already, trying to make it 24 by the up-and-coming superstar. Just 20, Carlos Alcaraz of Spain, who grew up being mentored by Rafa Nadal, nearly surprised Novak Djokovic in the semi-final at the French Open last month. He lost the first set, he made it one set all, and then he cramped up and had to retire. It was such a shame. This young man who won the US Open last year is unbelievably mature and talented for his age. Well, they made it to the final of Wimbledon and they gave us a treat. It was 3-2 to Carlos Alcaraz, who gave Novak Djokovic his first defeat on centre court for 10 years. 1-6, 7-6, 6-1, 3-6, 6-4 in the final set, 3-2, and a new champion and a new world number one. Well done, Carlos Alcaraz. On to motorsport. MotoGP are back on the 6th of August with the British Grand Prix from Silverstone. Frankie Bagnaia for Ducati Lenovo leads the way in their championship. World Superbikes are back with the Italian round from Imola. Race 1 was won by Alvaro Bautista, Ducati Aruba IT Racing, dominating the series. Second place, Toprak Razzaglioglu, Yamaha, Pata Racing. Third, Jonathan Rea, Kawasaki Racing. The sprint race was won by Toprak, who defeated Alvaro Bautista the first time he's been defeated since round 2. Andrea Locatelli, Yamaha, Pata Racing was third. And then A different top three. Top Rack won again, but Axel Bassini was second for Ducati Panigale Racing. Jonathan Rea was third for Kawasaki Racing. Alvaro Bautista leads the standings on 391 points. 70 clear of Top Rack Racing on 321, who's a further 113 clear of Andrea Locatelli in third on 208. British Superbikes are back next weekend, 21st to the 23rd of July, with round 6 and races 16, 17, 18 from Brands Hatch using the Grand Prix circuit. Tommy Brywell leads the standings for Beer Monster Ducati. Speedway GP, it was round 6 for Manila in Sweden. Well, Bartol Smalik didn't quite make the final, but he still made the semis. Dan Bewley from England, brilliant in the final, coming from 3rd to 1st, passing Martin Vakulik on the penultimate lap, with Patrick Dudek back in 3rd. The standings are still led, though, by 3-time world champion Bartol Smalik on 102 points. He is 20 clear of Freddie Lindgren on 82. 3rd place Jack Holder, 3 back on 79. They're now back, and not until the 12th of August, with round 7 from Riga with the Latvian Grand Prix. NASCAR is the Crayon 301 from New Hampshire Motor Speedway, and due to a delay, we cannot bring you that result till next week. This week, though, they're going to Pocono Raceway for the Pocono 400. IndyCar were back with the Honda Indy Toronto using their street circuit, and it was won by rookie, the brilliant Christian Lundegaard. He drives for Rahal Latterman Lanigan, and he dominated this race, was clearly the quickest car on show, and drove brilliantly for his first ever win. Second place, that man who'd won 4 of the last 5, Alex Palou for Chip Ganassi. Third place, Colton Herta for Andretti Autosport. Alex Palou still dominates the standings on 417 points, with his Chip Ganassi teammate Scott Dixon 117 back on 300, with a further 9 back to 2-time champion Team Penske's Joseph Newgarden. This week, they've got 2 races from Iowa Speedway. Saturday, they've got the Hy-V Homefront 250. And on Sunday, it's the Hy-V One Step 250. Formula E, we're back with rounds 13 and 14 from Rome with the Italian E-Prix. Round 13 was won by Mitch Evans for Jaguar TCS Racing. Second place, Nick Cassidy for Envision Racing. Third place, Maximilian Gunther for Maserati Racing. Round 14 was won by Jake Dennis for Avalanche Andretti. Second place, Norman Nato, Nissan Formula E team. And third place, Sam Bird for Jaguar TCS Racing. The standings are led by Jake Dennis on 195 points. He's 24 clear of Nick Cassidy. And third place, Mitch Evans from Jaguar TCS, 151. Next is London, the British E-Prix with rounds 15 and 16. Formula One are back this weekend with the Hungarian Grand Prix from the Hungaroring. And Max Verstappen from Red Bull leads the standings. We finish with football and 3 big transfers to let you know. Declan Rice and Jurrien Timber have finally been confirmed going to Arsenal. And Mason Mount has been confirmed with going to Manchester United. Watch out for our coverage of the Women's World Cup, which starts this week. We still like America, England and Spain. And that's it. That's our SLB Sports Roundup. Well, everyone, what another great show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I want to say thank you to our 3 powerful, strong champion women, Holly Doyle, Molly Campbell and Rhea Bowes. Thank you to you, the listeners. And thank you to Johan, Rafaela and the whole team at UK Off Radio for giving us this amazing platform. We'll see you all next week.